Welcome to the Career Zone podcast, where each episode we spend some time focusing on something that's on students' minds right now. I'm your host, Rachel, employability and careers consultant with the University of Exeter. You can catch up on all of our episodes by doing all of those subscribing and following things. We're on Spotify and iTunes.
I'm really delighted today to be joined by Sharon Kant. Sharon's a recruitment marketing specialist at the organisation Auticon. So welcome, Sharon. I thought just as a start point, could you tell us a little bit more about your role and particularly just an overview about Auticon as an organisation, please?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for inviting me to be part of your podcast, Kate. So about me, my background is I actually worked in career service in higher education. So for about 18 years, I worked at the University of Edinburgh Career Service, supporting student and graduate employability. My role was within an employer team, so advising employers on how to recruit and attract talent. And then just over a year ago, I have switched sides and joined a recruiter to try and put into practice all the things that I used to talk to other employers about doing. So I joined Auticon in February of 2023 as the recruitment marketing specialist, with a particular view to try and help us attract more autistic candidates into the organisation. And that is because Auticon is a social enterprise with a mission to try and reduce barriers to employment for autistic and other neurodivergent adults. So we're set up as a social enterprise, but we operate day to day as a tech consultancy. So what we do is we hire people who have strong tech and data skills, who are autistic, to join our team of tech and data consultants, and then their day-to-day work is with some of our clients. So the people that we hire have the benefit of all of the support of Auticon as a neurodivergent friendly organisation. They have a permanent contract with us, but they get the opportunity to work on projects with some of our client organisations. And on the client side, the clients get the benefit of experiencing the skills and talents of our autistic workforce. So they get first-hand experience of all of the strengths that we see in our autistic employees. And the idea is that becomes a catalyst for change and that those organisations become more motivated and educated so that they become better at recruiting and retaining their own neurodivergent talent. So as a kind of side shoot from that, what Auticon started doing as we were having success in this area, as well as working with organisations who want to use our team of autistic consultants for their tech and data work, we started working with other organisations who are just more generally interested in trying to make their workforce more neurodiverse and want to make their culture and their practices more neurodivergent friendly. So now we do a whole suite of support and training around about supporting organisations on their journey towards neuroinclusion.
Brilliant. Great. That sounds such a great ethos, Sharon. Thanks for sharing and giving an overview there. So if somebody's working at Auticon, can you give us just an idea of how that person would be supported in the workplace?
Yeah, of course. So I guess there's two stages to it. We can maybe touch on recruitment later, but in terms of when they actually join Auticon, the support that we have in place, the main thing that's really important for our autistic consultants and the thing that so many of them say they really value about working at Auticon is the coaching support. So inbuilt into the role is the ongoing support of a coach who works with their consultants on an ongoing basis throughout their whole time at Auticon and in a very holistic way. So the coach will support that person with whatever they need support with, and that could be in terms of what they're finding tricky with work, but it could be outside of work as well. So it could be that, for example, somebody is struggling slightly with their sleep pattern at the moment and that they're finding that they're, you know, when they get up in the morning, it's quite hard to motivate themselves to get into work mode. So that obviously isn't a work issue directly, but it has a knock-on effect on somebody's ability to feel like they're performing well at work. So the coach would support with that kind of thing as well. It could be house moves or a new flatmate moving in, anything outside work that might have an impact on how that person's feeling about their work. But also with more kind of directly work related issues. So the idea of the coach as well is that they can act as a bit of a bridge between Oticon, our consultant, and the client that the consultant is currently working with. So sometimes it can mean that the consultant might go to their coach and say, we're being asked to contribute to a 10-minute stand-up meeting every morning. This is new. I'm not comfortable. I don't really understand what's being expected. And the coach might speak to the client they're working with and get a better understanding of why that's required, if it's required, if there's any way that that person might be able to submit their updates via email in the morning and somebody else read them out, for example. So it can support with those kind of issues, and it works both ways. So again, it could be that the client might come to the job coach and say, I was speaking to Sarah yesterday about this new direction the project's going in, and I've explained what's going to be required over the next 2 or 3 weeks, but I'm just a bit concerned she might feel a bit overwhelmed with it all. Could you check in with her to make sure that she's understood that, you know, it's not all on her to do all this work and it's a team effort and that she's feeling okay with it. So it's just an extra kind of level of support. So yeah, the coaching is definitely one of the main things that supports us to be an autism friendly employer.
Brilliant. And like you say, it sounds very holistic then, helping employees with their out of work life, which obviously affects their work as well, doesn't it? And very bespoke, yeah. It sounds like, Sharon, as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very person-centred approach to the support that we provide, and just trying to support each person individually on what they might require. And, you know, all of our consultants use the coaching provision in different ways. Some maybe use it on a regular weekly basis. Some they maybe feel every 2 weeks is enough. Some people like to meet in person. Some people like to meet on Teams. Mm. So again, the provision is delivered in a kind of personalised way as well.
Great, thank you. Now, you mentioned the recruitment process. So if we can just focus on that first of all, because in my role, I'm really privileged. I work with our accessibility team. So a lot of referrals are from students that are concerned about disclosing their neurodivergence at that first initial stage at the recruitment process, whether it's application form, cover letter, email, CV. Have you got any advice for students about how to approach disclosure at that, and you know, those initial stages and almost that first contact with an organisation?
Well, I think I would say the first thing to think about is that it is a personal decision around about how you want to disclose, if you want to disclose, and at what stage you would like to disclose. I would encourage people to think about disclosing at the point where it's going to be to your advantage. So if you think that it's advantageous to you to ask for reasonable adjustments in an interview process or an application process, then, you know, strongly consider urging you to do that. Bearing in mind that you don't need to go into a huge amount of detail at that point about the specifics of your disability or your condition, you can focus on asking for the actual adjustment that would enable you to perform that part of the assessment process to the best of your ability. So that is something to think about. I mean, the consultants that we work with, when they talk about their previous experiences before joining Oticon. At Oticon, I guess we're a bit different because people are coming to us specifically because they are autistic. So the disclosure is kind of inbuilt and it's out there. But when we're talking to other employers, we, you know, we're discussing these things with them, and as part of our neuro inclusion training around about how they can make their processes as open and inclusive as possible. And I guess one of the things that we try to encourage employers to do is just to think about making processes and kind of inclusive by design, so that in an ideal world there might not be a need to ask for the specific adjustments because the process is so inclusive and open and flexible that there would be a way for you to perform, take an option that is already provided. So, you know, that's things like us talking to employers around about just making interview questions available to all candidates. Sometimes that's a reasonable adjustment people might ask for, you know, can they get the interview questions in advance? sometimes employers are concerned about if that's an unfair to other candidates, and that's where we get into the discussions around equality versus equity. But so yeah, sometimes a solution to that is, you know, thinking actually people won't always disclose, and there might be other people who would benefit and perform better in our interview process if we were to just make the questions available in advance. So let's just offer them to everybody. So I guess that's looking at it from the employer's side. But yeah, back to students, I guess, yeah, as I say, it's really personal. It just depends how people feel about the disclosure and what they think they might, reasonable adjustments they might be able to gain from disclosing. I think in terms of how you approach that conversation, I would always advise that people are as specific as possible about what they think would benefit them. I would take away the danger, I guess, of the employer filling that gap for you if you aren't specific. So if you go to an employer and say, I need some reasonable adjustments because I've got X condition, you're reliant on the employer knowing about that condition, not making snap judgments, prejudice around about what that condition means. Whereas if you can go to them and say, I would benefit from X, Y, and Z, which might be, you know, having a quiet space before I come into the interview, or it might be I would benefit from having some extra time in the assessment process, whatever you're asking for, if you can be specific about that, and ideally, you know, saying I would benefit from this because it will allow me to perform to the best of my abilities, or it'll remove the distractions which can be problematic for me and allow me to perform well in your interview process. That just helps the employer respond well to that reasonable adjustment request as well. And it increases your chances of getting what you actually need if you can be specific about what it is you're asking for. Now, you might not always know that, and that's okay as well. I think it's a learning process for a lot of people as they go through processes. And sometimes it's hard to know what to ask for because you don't know exactly what will come up in the interview process or the assessment process. So that can sometimes be quite a good place to start as well. So you don't need to go straight in necessarily with asking for adjustments. Your starting point could be just to ask if they could give you more detail around about what to expect from the process, and then that will give you the information you might need to think about if you do need to ask for adjustments or not.
Thank you. That's some really great advice there, isn't it? And, you know, when I'm talking to students, I think they feel that, is it going to put them at a disadvantage to start with if they are asking for, yeah, you know, they see it as help, don't they, and giving them an unfair advantage. So it's important, isn't it, to feel that actually, you know, getting more detail of what's expected, and then it might be that you don't need adjustments, and it's about that level playing field as well, isn't exactly. it? And I guess another approach as well is in that exploring and finding the right organisation for you. Auticon sounds like that, you know, super, super supportive, and with all that holistic, bespoke support as well. But in that process of finding the right organisation for you, where you feel valued, supported, able to progress with your career, this recruitment process, it's a two-way process, isn't it? That it's giving you a chance to find out more about the company, isn't it? The organisation too.
That's right. And actually, some of our consultants say exactly that they like to disclose, or that previously, before they joined Auticon, they liked to disclose quite early on, because that initial reaction to that disclosure gave them that insight into how they would be treated within the organisation. So you can, like you say, Kate, view it that way as a way of getting an initial feel for how inclusive the organisation is going to be.
Absolutely. And then, you know, you might decide that you don't want to disclose during the recruitment process, or you feel you don't need to. So when you've got that job offer, it's absolutely okay, Sharon, isn't it, to disclose then, or when you start at work as well?
Absolutely. There's no right or wrong time to make that disclosure or start talking to your employer about any adjustments that you think you might benefit from or need to be able to perform to the best of your abilities in the workplace. And yeah, I think sometimes people think, oh, I've not disclosed in the recruitment process, I can't bring it up now. Yeah. You can. If you feel comfortable doing that when you first start, then that's fine. If you don't feel comfortable doing that when you first start, then you can disclose a few months in, it can be a few years in. It's fine to disclose at any point. And equally, your needs might change. You might actually think, I actually don't need to disclose because, you know, I've got a feel for the company now. I've been in here for a few weeks. I think it's actually fine. I don't need to ask for anything. But then something might change within the organisation, or something might change with you and your condition, and it's okay to bring it up further down the line. And similarly, it's okay to ask for changes to any adjustments that you have previously asked for. Sometimes I think people get caught up in a situation where, you know, they've asked for certain adjustments and they've gone through that process and then maybe feel a bit stuck with them. And a supportive employer wants to know that the adjustments that they have put in place for you are actually working to help you do your job well. So if something changes and you find that they're no longer working, or you would like to try some different adjustments, hopefully if you're in an inclusive organisation, then your line manager is going to be responsive to that and explore different options with you as well.
And I guess when you're in the workplace, it's thinking about, are there any sort of examples you could give of, you know, reasonable adjustments that have really helped the neurodiverse consultant that you've got, just to help students think of what that might look like in the workplace?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it varies hugely, and it should always be about what supports you as an individual, but there's kind of certain groups of adjustments that we often talk about. So you've got your kind of sensory adjustments, so thinking about perhaps the lighting or the noise levels in the workplace. So that might be asking if you can have dimmable lighting, or that it's okay that you wear a cap to block out the direct light coming from above you, for example. It might be about having a preferred desk, even though it's maybe an open plan situation or a hot desking situation. You know, you might need to always have the security of a particular desk that's away from the aisles where people are passing by, for example. So that's the kind of thing you might be thinking about in terms of the sensory environment. In terms of executive functioning and processing information, it might be things like asking that there's always an agenda in any meetings that you're invited to. It might be making sure that deadlines are always really clear and specific. It might be asking for a bit of notice if you need to give your input into something. So maybe not expecting you to kind of do that kind of brainstorming meeting and have it coming up with really great points there and then on the spot, making sure that there's a way to input your views afterwards as well. So just making sure there's different ways to make sure that you're included in those kind of situations. It could be in terms of communication and meetings, again, maybe making sure that meetings aren't too long, kind of shorter meetings, making sure there's breaks in between meetings. And that kind of ties in then to working patterns and thinking about having flexible or adjusted hours. So sometimes for our consultants, it's maybe having a slightly later start point to the day, so that if they are commuting into an office, they're avoiding that busier period. And then similarly, working a little bit later, so they're avoiding the busy commuting time coming home. Obviously, hybrid working is really important, having a bit of balance between having time in an office environment and a home environment, if that's possible. And maybe just getting some support in kind of thinking about how you structure your day and the flexibility to do certain tasks at certain times to tie in with when you're feeling that you got a good flow to get on with that type of task, and some other tasks that you find a bit more mundane or trickier, scheduling them for a time that suits you better when you can work your way through them at a time that suits you. So there's lots of little things. Most of these things aren't, you know, expensive at all. They're quite easy for anybody to put into practice. But quite often, I think what we find is accumulation of all these little things that can actually make a difference, and just the culture of the organisation having the willingness to make these small adjustments counts for a lot as well.
Thanks, Sharon. Gosh, some things there that I hadn't thought about. So it's just nice to hear from a work perspective, isn't it, in the workplace? What mm-hmm. You know, there's just such minor adjustments like lighting or noise levels, or having you know a desk that you know where your desk is could make such a difference to how somebody can perform at work and day to day, isn't it? And you know, missing those horrible commuter sort of, you know, hotspot times as well. Before we finish, are there any, and Autocon is obviously a super, super supportive workplace. If a student is looking and researching for an organisation that they're thinking about applying to, Are there any sort of things that they could look out for, perhaps if they were looking at a website, for example, mm-hmm. initially, that indicates that they're going to be, you know, a supportive place to work?
Yeah, I mean, things we would probably talk about looking out for would be, you know, does the organisation have some kind of commitment to equality, diversity, inclusion on their website or mentioned within the job advert? Are they inviting you to let them know about any reasonable adjustments that you might need? Is there an email address provided so that you can reach out to somebody to make those inquiries? Are they a member of the Disability Confidence Scheme? Can be a great indication of an organisation who is obviously committed to supporting disabled students. Then I guess maybe just looking at their social media or their website again, if they've got a blog, anything like that, that gives you an indication of, you know, what do their values seem to be? What are the things that they're talking about? Are they supporting any diversity, inclusion, belonging initiatives? Do they have any groups within the organisation that support underrepresented cohorts of staff? So all of those kind of things can start to build up a little picture for you of how inclusive the organisation might be. Stalking people on LinkedIn is always good as well. If you have a wee look at some of the key members of the organisation on LinkedIn, what are they talking about on there? Do they seem to be open and inclusive? That can give you a good indication as well. But yeah, it's starting to build up a little picture. The only thing I would say to that is sometimes it can be harder to do that for smaller organisations. So they're maybe less likely to have, you know, lots of diversity networks within the organisation, for example. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they are not committed to diversity, equity and inclusion. It's just harder for them to be seen to be doing that. So I would always urge people to give organisations a bit of the benefit of the doubt. And then we've talked earlier about how your initial requests or outreach to the organisation, how the response you get from that gives you quite a good indication. And I always think that if, you know, an organisation maybe doesn't know everything about your condition, or they're maybe not an expert in a certain adjustment that you've asked for, but the way that they respond to that, if they're open and curious and giving you the feeling that they're happy to work with you on that, even though they maybe haven't had previous experience about it, I think that does count for a lot. So I guess just a wee caveat that for a lot of smaller organisations, it might be new to them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they won't be supportive.
Sharon, thank you so much for your time today. It's been really useful to hear the employer perspective on how to approach disclosure, you know, how to find supportive employers, how to navigate through the recruitment process, asking for reasonable adjustments, and then when you're in the workplace as well, and just hearing some things that could be helpful to enable you to feel fulfilled and happy at work. It's so lovely to hear about Auticon and organisations like Auticon, that they exist supporting your employees, but also the really interesting around the neuroinclusion training and helping other organisations mm-hmm. to be supportive to the neurodiverse community as well. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for having us.
This was the Career Zone podcast, brought to you by the University of Exeter Career Zone. Check out iTunes and Spotify to keep up with all of our regular releases. And if you'd like us to cover something else in another episode, just send us a message, hashtag Career Zone Podcast, at UOE Career Zone or at UOE Cornwall Career Zone on Instagram, and we'll follow up in one of the next episodes.